I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Gal, and today I'm joined by the fabulous chef, Gary Foulkes. Having worked with a host of great chefs over the years, Gary's used his unique passion and precision to turn the fabulous Anglo restaurant in London into one of the most evocative Michelin-starred dining experiences in the capital. And it's such a pleasure to have you with us today, Gary. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well indeed.
How have you been during the lockdown?
It's just such a strange time, really, wasn't it? I mean, especially at the beginning. Because it was just so unprecedented. You know, one minute everyone was kind of working away in the restaurant, everything. The next minute, that was it. We closed.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, there was kind of no end in sight, really. It was also sort of up in the air. And especially, you know, my little boy was obviously sent home from school. So, homeschooling was just something I never thought I'd have to endure. Over the weeks, it became easier and became better. And actually, it was really enjoyable in the end.
Oh, brilliant.
Really enjoyable.
Have you been teaching him how to cook?
He's not interested, to be honest. He likes to eat. But he's definitely more of a customer than an actual chef. He's only six. He's always got a comment about it. You know, oh, that was nice, Daddy, or whatever. But he's definitely more edging towards eating in restaurants than actually cooking.
Well, I take a leaf from his book, actually, because I'm pretty much the same. I'd rather eat than So you were actually cooking for the NHS as well for a while. Didn't you do something like 300 meals a day?
Yeah, we were doing around 350 meals a day.
Amazing.
Again, which was, you know, it was really, again, it's just something different from what we normally do. You know, we've gone from doing this kind of really refined food, you know, on a plate and that goes out into the restaurant. And then it was, okay, we're going to start doing 350 meals in one go, which is a different mindset. But again, it was really enjoyable. And it's nice to sort of contribute to something that's helping a lot of people in such a large way.
Yeah, absolutely. And were you using Anglo's kitchen to do that?
We've got the kitchen in Anglo, we've got the kitchen in the hotel, so we're using the hotel kitchen. Just because it's better set up for doing things in a larger amount, you know, as brat pans and more oven space and things like that.
Right. And so, I mean, when do you open up Anglo? Have we got a date yet?
We're going to be opening in the middle of September.
Okay.
Yes, just, I think, you know, it was just that sort of, the right thing to do, sort of, because where the restaurant is geographically, you know, a lot of the people in the city, they're away on holiday or working from home, and then they're going to start sort of filtering back in September. So it just makes sense just to hold off for the time being and then just go back in September.
Yeah, so speaking of holiday, you're in Greece enjoying the sun.
I am indeed in Greece.
I can see a sun mist.
Yes, just slightly. Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful here. We're on a little island called Polygandros, and we've just come from Santorini. And yeah, it's beautiful. The food's beautiful. It's just a nice environment. Yeah, it's great.
And have you been cooking there as well?
I haven't, no. I've avoided cooking, thankfully. I've been at the other end. So yeah, we've just been eating, you know, food's so simple, but so fresh and so delicious, which is, that's what I love about food. You know, a great product, and just keep it simple but make it tasty, and that's pretty much everything we've eaten so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been to Greece, and the food there is phenomenal. The fish is stunning. It's so fresh.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely love it. So Gary, tell me about your early days and how you became a chef to start with.
It was never a calling for me that, you know, I came into this world and I was destined to be a chef. That was just not the case. I never got sort of that romantic story that sort of a lot of people trot out about watching someone, you know, make handmade this or handmade that. That just didn't happen in for me. I wanted to be a footballer, but I wasn't good enough. So I then wanted to be a marine biologist, but I wasn't smart enough. So I just fell into it, basically. I went to work at, for my work experience in school, I went to a hotel and I did a day in each department. So I did a day with the restaurant, a day with the porters, a day with reception, a day with the sort of managers. And then the last day, I did a day in the kitchen. And as soon as I went in there, you could just see there was just this energy in there with all the people. And everyone, it was a Friday, so everyone had been out on a Thursday night. So there was all these sort of stories flying around about what had happened the night before, and everyone was having so much fun and everyone was working. I thought, this is cool. I'd like to be involved in this, because right. You know, when you're 15, 16, you don't really think about work, do you? You just want to have fun. And
you just want to have fun. Yeah, make money.
And that's kind of where it all started for me, really. And then I went to catering college, and at the same time I was working at a place called the Chester Grosvenor, which was at the time one of the few restaurants in the kind of northwest that had a Michelin star.
Right.
So that's where I went to work. And that's where it all started. And as soon as I was kind of involved in it, I just absolutely loved it.
And you were only 17 when you went to work with the late Gary Rhodes. What is your fondest memory of him that you can share with us?
I mean, Gary was such a great cook. You know, he was such a great cook. His food was so simple, but so well thought out. And I think when you work for someone like that, and you know, Gary was so sort of enthusiastic about the food and where it came from and everything else, you can't help but rub off on you. Favorite memory? I mean, I remember him absolutely tearing me to pieces once because I left my fridge in a mess. I thought, I'll clean it up in the morning before anyone gets in. And unfortunately for me, Gary got in before me and it went through the fridge and absolutely tore me to pieces. But it never happened again.
you still kept your job, so it couldn't have been that bad.
I was still there. There was another time, I think, it was an open kitchen, and I was on the meat section, and Gary Rhodes actually came in to dine in the restaurant that night because it was his birthday, and he came in with his wife and some friends, and the bookings just went through the roof for some reason. And it was just, I think it was just one of the worst services I've ever had. I still remember it now. And, the head chef was calling things away, and, you know, I hadn't even got it in the oven. And it was all starting to unravel.
Oh, God.
And Gary left the table he was dining with, came into the kitchen, put on an apron, and came onto the section with me. And he was like, look, calm down. Don't worry about it. Like, what do we need to do?
Oh, bless him.
You know, I was about 18 at the time. I didn't know what I needed to do. And then, like, don't worry, we'll sort it out. And he got everything back, you know, about 30 minutes later, everything's moving again. He took his apron off, went back into the restaurant, enjoyed his meal.
Oh, wow.
On his birthday. And, you know, at the end of the night, you know, he sent in a load of drinks for the guys in the kitchen who, you know, we'd been through the mill. And then he just came in and said, oh, that was great, thanks very much. It was a difficult night to see that, but, you know, well done. And I thought that was really, really cool, actually.
Yeah, that's really, really nice. I mean, he must have been an amazing mentor to you. But you also work with a series of celebrated chefs. I mean, you've got John Campbell, William Drabble, Richard Neat, Phil Howard. Who would you say has had the biggest impact on your career?
I think it's each one in different ways, if you like. I mean, John Campbell, for instance, John's a great guy and is so organized. It just defies belief how organized that guy is. And everything has to be in the right order all the time. So I learned a lot of that off John, that, you know, everything has to be, and precision and how to get what you want. And, you know, that I learned a lot of that off John. Food, for me, really the square. I mean, you know, Phil and Rob, who was the head chef there when I started there, Rob Weston, who's, you know, for my money, he's one of the best cooks in London. I learned so much there about flavour and food and combinations. I mean, you know, Phil Howard's got, he's probably got the best palate in London, in my opinion. Just the way that Phil and Rob looked at food and how they respected the ingredients, and that was massive for me. That was probably the place I learned the most was at the square.
Right. And what is it that you teach young chefs that come through your kitchens? What is the main kind of lessons that you like to impart with them?
Don't phone in sick. It's the first lesson. To make sure you're on time.
And clean your fridge.
Yeah, clean your fridge and make sure you're on time. No, I mean, it's again, I think it's just about understanding where things come from and the quality of the ingredients. You know, like we buy the best ingredients that we can get our hands on, especially the fish, because that's obviously such a huge part of it. And it's nice for the younger guys to sort of understand that they've got this beautiful product and to learn to respect it and treat it properly. And it just gives, it's a great start to a career if someone teaches you how to respect things and teaches you where they come from and how much they cost and things like that. You know, because it's easy just to give someone some mushrooms, but if they don't know anything about them, there's no point. So it's a big thing for me to teach people where they come from and how to treat them correctly.
Yeah, and you were, I mean, you mentioned the square, and you were there for 5 years before you set out on, could I call it a culinary journey across the world? Is that right?
It's been called other things, but yeah, let's go with that. Yeah, I was there for 5 years as sous chef, and then I left and went traveling for a couple of years.
And what was it that prompted you to go traveling?
I don't know. I mean, it's always something that I've enjoyed, you know, and I think I went away for 6 months on like a break. I just went away for 6 months. I went to Southeast Asia and then came back. And then I think while we were away, like my now wife, we decided, look, should we just do a big trip? Because when you get this sort of taste for traveling, 6 months is just, it's just not enough.
Not enough, you know? Yeah.
Years is not enough because there's so much to see, and you know, the world's a huge, huge, amazing place. So we decided, just after we got married, we decided to go away traveling for a period, and that's when we went away for a couple of years.
And you started out in a caravan?
A camper van, actually. We got an old Volkswagen camper van, and drove to France. And started off in France, and then we went through France, so Normandy, Brittany, and then sort of worked up to the south of France. And then we went to Italy, Corsica, Sardinia, a little bit of Croatia. And then started to get a little bit cold. And then looped back round. And then we got back to England, and we flew to Nepal. And then we went trekking in Nepal for a couple of weeks. And about a month, actually. And then just started working through. So India, we spent quite a long time in India. We went to Sri Lanka. And then Indonesia. And just kept going and going and going.
Wow.
And it got to a point where I just thought, I just don't want it to stop. But obviously,
you want that money eventually, right?
Yeah, exactly. Funds running a little bit low. So when it was time to return, and that's when I went back to the Swearers head chef.
Right, but so before you came back, which was your most favourite destination for food?
Ooh. Oh, don't know really. I mean, you know, we went to Japan as well, and I mean, I think every country's got its own kind of food that I was completely blown away by. I loved the food in India because it was just so different, and it was just such a, you know, it's so regional. The food in India, you know, you could eat something in one sort of town, and then 6 kilometers down the road,
it's totally different.
It's the same, but it's a little bit different, and you know, it's just so much flavour. So I love Indian food, but I love Japanese food because of the precision and the care that goes into it. Yeah. I love Thai food and Vietnamese food because of the flavour. So yeah. I can't really put a finger on which would be my favourite.
Right. And did you visit El Bulli as well?
I did, not on that trip, but I had been to El Bulli previously.
Okay.
It's quite funny, actually. My wife, I obviously always wanted to go to El Bulli. And then my wife emailed them just off the cuff because we were going to be in San Sebastian for a friend's wedding, And she emailed him and said, oh, I suppose you've got a table, even though there was like a waiting list, you know, 5 years or whatever it was. And then, so she just sent an email, and they sent an email back saying, your table is confirmed for this date.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That was easy. Wow. And then about 10 minutes later, got an email from the restaurant manager saying, I'm really sorry. We were just confirming our bookings and you've been sent the wrong email.
Right.
So I'm like, oh no. So in the space of half an hour, I'd gone from trying to get a table at Elbow, getting one, to being told that it wasn't my table. So then I was like, oh no. So Sarah emailed them back and said, oh, that's, you know, I can't believe this happened. I'm really upset for my husband because he's a chef. And
yeah.
So they emailed back and said, look, we'll put you on the cancellations list. And if somebody cancels, you can have the table. Yeah. And sure enough, someone cancelled. And then they emailed us and said, you know, we have a table available for you.
Oh, so amazing.
That was it.
We lucked out.
Yeah, completely. Completely.
And did you get to meet him?
I did, yeah. Yeah, we went there. And then, I mean, it was just such an amazing place. It was almost like dining in someone's front room. It was so personal. And you go into the kitchen, it was, I don't know, there's like 35 chefs and no one was saying a word. Everyone was just working. And Ferrando just stood there. So we just went over and, you know, said hello, and then off we went to the restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Amazing experience, really, really.
And what was Ferrando like? Did you get to have a little chit-chat?
Not really. I mean, he was kind of just watching this fleet of chefs, just making sure that everything's in the right place. So I didn't want to interrupt him, to be honest. So we just sort of went into the restaurant, and then, you know, I think we had about 50 courses. So you've got quite a bit of food to get through, but everything's just so perfect and so minute. And it was so impressive, really, really impressive.
You returned back to the UK and you went to the Square.
Yeah.
And so that was 3 years later. Did it feel quite odd to return to the kitchen, or did it feel like you were back home again?
I must, you know, a lot of chefs say, oh, I really miss being in the kitchen. I don't really get that. I really enjoy being in the kitchen cooking. I love it. But when I'm not there, it's not something I kind of yearn to do, or I really wish I was back in the kitchen, because I enjoy the things as well. It was a bit strange because, so, you know, I came back and I hadn't cooked at all for, you know, the best part of 3 years. So all of a sudden, you're like, I wonder if I can still do it. But, you know, it took a week or two to sort of settle back into even just the routine of going to bed, you know, at the time, and then getting up early in the morning, you know, and being back in that routine of working. But again, it was just, you know, I loved it there. I really, really enjoyed it. It was a great restaurant. And I really enjoyed, as I said, working with Phil and Robert when he was there previously. Yeah. I mentioned before, yeah, they both taught me so much. I've got a lot of respect for both of them, because I wouldn't look at food the way I look at it now if I hadn't worked there.
And so you moved on to Angler after that in 2016, which is a beautiful restaurant. I absolutely loved it when I was there. And it's perched on the top of South Place Hotel, which is a very trendy hotel. How did the opportunity come about?
I just got approached, you know, would it be of interest? And then, you know, I'd been at the Square I've been there as head chef for 3 years. And, you know, it was probably time for me to move on. You know, I wanted to sort of, as much as I was cooking my own food, it was very much within the Square bracket. Because, you know, when you work at an iconic restaurant like that, there's certain things that people expect when they book to go there, which is completely understandable.
Yeah.
You know, if you took sort of the classic dishes off the menu, you know, people come and go, hey, I've only come for the crab lasagna, or is it? You know, so I felt a little bit limited based on that. So I thought, you know, when an opportunity came along, I thought, well, you know, let's have a look at it. I've always enjoyed cooking with fish and shellfish and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it just seemed like it'd be a really nice match, actually.
And you have a little bit of an Asian influence in your cooking. Would you say that's come from your travels?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I think traveling is the thing that inspires me the most when it comes to food, and, you know, generating ideas and things like that. I don't spend a great deal of time looking at cookbooks and getting inspiration that way. I get inspiration from kind of experiences, you know, going somewhere and seeing an ingredient I haven't seen before. Especially when I was traveling in Asia, you know, I see some things, I'm like, wow, like what is this? And just had this, just being, I'm naturally inquisitive, so I want to know what it is and how to use it correctly and how to get the best out of it. And you know, I've got a recipe in there from the moment, but it's been on for a long time. It's a dashi, and then I got the recipe from a guy in Japan. We happened to eat at this restaurant, and it's just this mind-blowing dashi recipe that he used. So with my sort of broken Japanese and his broken English, we kind of got this recipe out of him. And a good friend of mine's Japanese, so she translated it for me when I got back.
Right.
And that's the recipe that I use in the Angler now with the turbot dish.
Oh, amazing. That's a really nice story.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's where the Asian influence comes from, is what I've seen when I'm traveling.
Right.
Even just from the smallest things, like, you know, like shiso, I use a lot of shiso. I use white soy to cure fish instead of salt and things like that. Just little things you pick up along the way.
Right. And so you talk about that kind of thing for inspiration. Who, or are there any like industry chefs that inspire you?
I think Brett Graham's a fantastic cook. I think he's probably the most talented cook in the UK. And obviously I know Brett, and I think what the Ledbury was a fabulous restaurant. So you can't not be inspired by someone like Brett, because he's so passionate about it. And again, it all goes back to the ingredient. You know, he starts this amazing ingredient and treats it correctly and just turns it into, you know, the fabulous things that you get at the Ledbury.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from a food point of view, yeah, definitely Brett. I can't think of a better chef, in my opinion, in the UK.
It's so sad about the Ledbury closing down.
It is because it's an iconic restaurant, in my opinion. Great hospitality, great food.
Totally agree. Totally agree. It's such a shame. So moving on, you're the proud holder of a Michelin star. Do you have ambitions to get two?
I think everyone does, don't they, when they've got one? I mean,
what's one up one?
Oh yeah, I'll get two then. I mean, yeah, it you know what, it's not something that kind of gets me out of bed in the morning saying I have to go in and get two stars. I think it's more of a personal thing than a business related thing. The most important thing is the restaurant successful and that people come and they have a good time. If you haven't got a financially viable package, and it doesn't matter how many stars you think you can get,
absolutely,
you're not going to get there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, is it something I'd like to get? Yeah, of course. I think everyone who's ambitious, if they got one of something, you want two. Mm. Liverpool just won the Premier League. What do they want to win again? Absolutely. You know, so it's just one of those things. I think it's a natural thing to progress and to keep improving. Yeah. But as I said, it's not something that kind of keeps you awake at night, whether I'll get it or not.
But when you did get it, I mean, were you expecting it? Were you striving towards actually achieving that one star in the first place?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to
get it. You were getting out of bed in the morning thinking.
Yeah, I did want to get a Michelin star because, you know, I pretty much worked in, you know, one and two star restaurants right the way through my career. So yeah. I think for me to not sort of try and get one, but I think I would have let myself down a little bit. It's, you know, obviously that's not the path for everyone, but that's the sort of path I wanted to take. So yeah, of course, I was made up when I actually got one.
Yeah. And do you remember the moment that you actually found out that you got it?
I didn't find out absolutely concrete until I went to the Michelin Awards. Obviously I got an invite to the Michelin Awards and I just thought, like, what's this for? And, you know, I told a couple of people, and they're like, well, obviously you're not inviting you not to give you something, because that'd be really unfair. I kind of knew, but, you know, you don't really know until someone presents it with you.
Right, yeah. That must have been a really amazing moment, though.
Yeah, it was, you know, especially when, you know, you sort of you go on stage and they gave us this award, you know, you're kind of looking out at all the people there, all these amazing chefs, you've seen their food and you've eaten their food, and you're like, wow, you know, these guys are some of the best cooks in the world. And yeah, it was nice to kind of be sort of recognised for your cooking, if you like.
Yeah. So once Anglo's back open and things return back to normal, fingers crossed there isn't a second wave here. I think we're all hoping for that. What does the future look like for you? Are you thinking of maybe opening up somewhere else, or are you gonna you're staying with Anglo or more restaurants? What is it that you're thinking in terms?
At the moment, you know, no one knows what the future holds, do they? Especially now. I mean, you know, no one knows. Yeah. So my main focus will again just be Anglo getting it reopened. Again, just focusing on the food and the guest experience. Yeah. I want to make it as good as it can be. That's all I say about Anglo. I just want to make it as good as it can be. So that's kind of my main focus over the next sort of 6 months. I tend not to look too far in advance, you know, because anything can happen.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought that 6 months ago that
this would happen?
This would happen. So I don't look too far in advance because I think you can kind of overcomplicate things.
Yeah.
But yeah, my focus for the next sort of 6 months to a year is just focusing on Anglo getting and just improving it all the time.
And have you been working on new menus or anything like that while you've had the time off?
Well, I mean, I've seen, you know, you see things, as I said, you know, I've been away for a couple of weeks now, and I just see sort of little things here and there, and you think, actually, yeah, I can use that, I can adapt that in, I can use that in my cooking, I can sort of do a dish similar to this, but tweak it a little bit in my own kind of style. Mm. So yeah, I've got quite a few ideas lined up. I mean, more often than not, as most chefs will probably tell you, you have this idea in your head, and you're like, yeah, it's going to be fantastic, and then you cook it, and you're like, no, it's not really good at all, actually. So you have to sort of go back and start all over again. But yeah, I've got I reckon about two menus worth of dishes which I can kind of sift through and
wow,
trial them, and then just sort of pick out the best ones and put them on.
Well, I can't wait to come and try them.
Yeah, I mean, there's always be certain dishes that will be on the menu, sort of the mackerel tartare, for instance. You know, I put that on sort of pretty much straight away when I got there. And I'd probably get lynched if I took it off the menu. We sort of sell so much of it. And a lot of people sort of come there and like, wow, the mackerel tartare, it's a big favourite. So that will always be on. But the rest we kind of just sort of interchange season.
Right. And so I've got one last question for you, Gary. Tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
I got chased by an orangutan in Borneo.
Oh, wow.
When I was traveling. We went sort of into the jungle, if you like, and on a tour. And there was only the two of us on the tour with the guy. And we were walking around and we seen this adolescent baby orangutan. I'm like, wow, look at this. And, you know, sort of went a little bit too close with the camera. The next minute, this irate mother orangutan just come charging out of the trees and proceeds to chase me, leaving everyone else alone, down this strip. So I took off rather quickly. And luckily, it kind of, as soon as I was kind of out of the way, it stopped and sort of went back to the baby. I mean, my wife thought it was the funniest thing she'd ever seen as I was charging down the path and chased by an orangutan twice my size. But
you've never run so fast in your life.
I reckon I'd have given Usain Bolt a run for his money.
Brilliant.
It was scary at the time, but actually quite hilarious when we sat in the bar afterwards talking about it.
Do you think it knew that you were a chef, and she thought if she grabbed hold of you, she'd have the best cuisine for the rest of her life?
I didn't even give it headspace. I just seen it left everyone behind me. It was every man for yourself.
Yeah, and you forgot all about Sarah.
Yeah, I mean, she could still be there.
Brilliant. All right, well, thank you so much. You've been such a good sport today. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, Gary.
And you.
And guys, if you want to follow Gary on Instagram, he's at Gary Fawkes Chef, and I'm at Posh Nosh Gal. Thanks, Gary.
No problem. See you later. Bye.